Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 1, observing the armies, text number 16. Anantividayam Raja Kunti Putra Yudhishthira Nakula Sahadevascha Sugosha Manupushpakao. Anantavijayam. The conch named Anantavijayam. Raja, the king. Kuntiputra, the son of Kunti. Yudhishthira. Nakala Sehadeva. Guess what that means. I don't know. Cha and Sugosha Manipushpakao. These are the two names of conch shells, Sugosha and Manipushpakao. So the rest of the verses are like that also. They're the names of the people on the battlefield. I'll just read it. Kashas cha prameshvasa shikandi cha maharata. Kristadum yavaratascha sagyakischa parajita. So this is just naming the generals that they're Mahamaratis. Drupado Dropadeyascha sarvashapratibhipate. So then there's Draupadi and the sons of Draupadi. Sobhajascha mahabahu sankhyam dhamma pritak pitak. So they all blew their conch shells. Translation and purport by his divine grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. King Yudhisthira, the son of Kunti, blew his conch shell, the Ananta Vijaya, and Nakula and Sahadeva blew the Sugosha and Manipushpaka. That great archer, the king of Kashi, the great fighter, Shikhandi, Dristadumya, Virata, the unconquerable Satyaki, Drupada, the sons of Draupadi, and others, O king, such as the mighty armed son of Subhadra, all blew their respective conch shells. So, a lot of people blowing their conch shells here. Purport. Sanjaya informed King Dhritarashtra very tactfully that his unwise policy of deceiving the sons of Pandu and endeavoring to enthrone his own sons on the seat of the kingdom was not very laudable. The signs very clearly indicated that the whole Kuru dynasty would be killed in that great battle, beginning with the grandsire Bhishma, down to the grandsons like Abhimanyu and others, including kings from many states of the world. All were present there, and all were doomed. The whole catastrophe was due to King Dhritarashtra, because he encouraged the policy followed by his sons. Setting the scene is in introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, the Mahabharata is an introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. But specifically, Bhagavad Gita is an introduction to Kali Yuga. And even the battle of Kurukshetra is an introduction to Kali Yuga. Because at the end of Dwarpa Yuga, there were still persons who were qualified Kshatriyas. And there were persons were qualified Brahmins. And certainly there were Vaishyas, Shudras, and others. The society was defined. But here we find the kings have become degraded, as we'll find in the ninth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, how kings gradually became degraded. Apparently it had started with Sringhi, the degradation of the Brahminical community. It said that when the demigods fought against the demons on the shore of the ocean of milk, many demons were killed, but because they were killed by the demigods, or for some reason, they took birth as kings on this planet. And kings and demoniac kings on this planet, and Lord Krishna was appealed, or Bhumi, in the earth planet, in the form of a cow, went to the shore of the ocean of milk to appear to Lord, or I should say, Bhumi in the form of a cow went to Lord Brahma and appealed for protection from the demoniac kings. I wonder what she's doing now. I guess maybe, hopefully she hasn't given up yet. In any case, Lord Brahma, he went to the shore of the ocean of milk, and there he received information that Krishna was going to advent. Along with the demigods should also come and help him in his pastime. And one of his main pastimes, of course, is killing the demons, which he effectively killed a good number of demons, kshatriyas. But then we find that after Krishna left, Krishna Dharma Upagate, Krishna Dharma Gyana Bhisaha, Kalo Nashta Drishamesha Prarnarko Dunoditaha. Krishna Swadharma. So Krishna Swadharma means his own abode. Upagate means he went away. Dharma Gyana Bhisaha, along with knowledge and religiosity. And Kalo Nashta Drishamesha, if there's no religiosity or knowledge, then we're in darkness. There's no culture, there's no understanding of what the culture should even be. Paranarko dunoditaha. The only thing we were left is Srimad Bhagavatam and the chanting of the holy names. But here we find that even when Krishna is present, by the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, they were not really acting like kshatriyas anymore. They were fighting in the day, they were fighting in the night. There was all kinds of activities going on which were not according to the kshatriya code. Someone like Dronacharya, who was a master of the astras, which can shoot hundreds and thousands, if not millions of arrows at one time, was employing his arrows on the foot soldiers. So that's quite an unequal match. One, if you're able to throw a million arrows at once, it's very hard to block them. In other words, he was slaughtering people unfairly. And of course, the other side used unfair means also Ashvatthama, the elephant, is dead. And then they, Dronacharya sat down and left, and then Draupadi's brother, Drishtadyumna, cut off his head. Because he didn't kill Dronacharya, because Dronacharya had already left his body. But anyhow, he got the credit for cutting his head off. And all kinds of other things went on. So by the time the battlefield Kurukshetra was over, the Kshatriya code was violated so many times that, practically speaking, it didn't really exist anymore. But even before that, Kali Yuga was being introduced by Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana cheating the Pandavas out of their kingdom. So it was evident that Kali Yuga was already there because, of course, we find even in Treta Yuga and many bygone Treta Yugas ago, Mandara, by Krishna's arrangement, by Lord Ramachandra's arrangement, she had Lord Ramachandra banished into the forest for 14 years. 14 years? 14 seems to be the common number of years you get banished. So in every yuga, there's always some problem, but Kali Yuga is the most evident, and we can see by the end of the battlefield Kurukshetra, things are quite disturbed in the world. The large number of kshatriyas that were killed, Prabhupada was hearing a tape today, he said, 64 crore, which is 640 million people. Kshatriyas were killed And then another time he said 6,400,000. So, and then when he was questioned about it, he said, well, give or take a few zeros, you know, that's the job of zero. In any case, a large number of warriors were killed. Even if it was a mere 6 million, still that's a lot to be killed in 18 days. So, here, there are all these warriors on the side of Arjuna blowing the conch shell, and it's uproarious, and the other side will blow their conch shell, and ultimately, we'll find out in the next verse, as we probably already know, victory will be on the side of Krishna. Because what kind of victory? That's a different thing. If you were one of the 640 million people that got killed on the battlefield, the question is, what kind of victory did you have? Or if you were one of the warriors on the other side who got killed and you went to the heavenly planets, you didn't really lose. So actually, victory was who? Victory was ultimately for the establishment of a God-conscious king on the throne. That was the victory. And of course, according to the victory for the others who all got killed was that they went to the heavenly planets. So that was also considered a victory, because Krishna told Arjuna that. Either you'll be killed on the battlefield, hetova prapsase svargam, chitva va bhukshasi mahim, tasmayu tishakontiyayu dayakrita nishchaya. Either you'll be killed on the battlefield and obtain the heavenly kingdoms, or you'll conquer or enjoy this earthly planet. Therefore, get up and fight with determination. So either way, because Krishna was there, and as long as they were following religious principles, then the victory was they were all benefited. But then if Krishna, they didn't see Krishna and they weren't following religious principles, the question is, where did they go? It's not automatic that you go to the heavenly planets. It depends on your consciousness. Those who were able to see Krishna at the time of dying on the battlefield, they were elevated because that's what they were thinking about. In any case, we find general statements, because it's hard to say specifically about 640 million people what happened to them. But generally speaking, yatra yogeshwara krishna yatra partha dhanaradara tatra shira vijayo bhutira dhruva nitya matira mama. Wherever there's Krishna, the master of all mysticism, and whether there's Arjuna, the yatra yogeshwara krishna yatra partha dhanaradara, who carries the bow, the Gandiva bow, there'll certainly be victory, but what will there be? Tatra shir vijayo, tatra shir opulence, vijayo victory, bhutir extraordinary power, and nitir morality. That is my opinion. The supreme morality is to surrender to Krishna. So that's what Arjuna showed, the supreme morality, by surrendering to Krishna. He didn't show the supreme morality by following all the different Kshatriya codes, because otherwise he wouldn't have killed Karna when his wheel got stuck in the mud and he was trying to get it out. Krishna told Arjuna to kill him. He didn't hesitate to kill Abhimanyu unfairly, so why should you be so concerned about the codes? So Arjuna, he followed Krishna's direction, and that's the supreme morality of the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, that doesn't mean we should go around killing people, because Arjuna had Krishna personally present there to tell him to do it. We don't know exactly what Krishna wants us to do, especially something like that, which is unprecedented. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement thus far is not aimed at killing people. It's aimed at liberating their consciousness. But in any case, the supreme oral instruction is sarva dharma prajaja mam ekam sharanam raja, to surrender to Krishna. And therefore, that goes even above mundane morality. Prabhupada didn't like it, even in Back to Godhead, when the devotees were criticizing meat eating. He didn't want that to take place. Because we don't eat meat. That's one of our principles. But our main principle is we eat food offered to Krishna. If Krishna ate meat, then we'd also eat meat. So our principle is we're not principally vegetarians, we're Krishnarians. So our moral principle is we do what Krishna, what he tells us to do. That's our moral principle. And we can see that when Prabhupada was talking to Harikesh, who's now Prabhu, he wanted him to go to the communist countries to preach. And Harikesh was giving so many different reasons why he shouldn't go there. And finally he said, well, there's nothing to eat there, I'll have to eat meat. So Prabhupada said, if you have to eat meat, then eat meat, but go and preach there. Because Krishna consciousness, of course, he didn't have to eat meat. It wasn't that bad. There were potatoes there. Because if I went there, I would have starved because I don't eat potatoes. But I wouldn't eat meat either. But I didn't have to go there. So, for us, even the devotees, sometimes we're not aware of that. Sometimes we get involved in all kinds of mundane things, you know, thinking that this is actually part of our Hare Krishna movement. Feeding the poor or whatever else. Of course, we feed them prasadam because they're poor, but we also feed the rich poor prasadam because spiritually speaking, they're also poor. So our principle is to feed prasadam to everyone. Not only to the poor, but also to everyone. So that they get spiritually benefited. We're really not a mundane welfare organization. But sometimes the devotees think like that, and sometimes we get bewildered by that, thinking that we're actually trying to save people's mundane existence. We're trying to become popular in society by presenting ourselves as a mundane organization. That was originally the Salvation Army, if you ever heard of them before. You've heard of the Salvation Army? You've heard of the Salvation Army?
Yes.
No. They were an organization in America, I guess at the beginning of the 1900s. And they were famous for going out in the street and chanting God's names on the street. And then they decided to become more popular. They become a welfare organization. Because some people thought they were crazy. As they think we're crazy. So they started to feed the poor, like the Ramakrishna Mission, poor Narayan, Dharidra Narayan. They fed them goat Narayan. Because everyone's Narayan, the goat's Narayan, the poor man's Narayan. So you feed the poor Narayan, the goat Narayan. Prabhupada and our acharyas condemned such a conception. And so the Salvation Army, they went out, they stopped going out and chanting, and they got involved in mundane social work. That's all they're doing now. You hardly even know they're a religious organization, or were formerly a religious organization. So they became popular, because they helped the poor, but that's all they do. They feed them non-vegetarian meals, so they're going to hell, and they're taking all the people with them in the name of so-called social work. So if one wants to become popular, one can become popular very easily, but that popularity will not actually help them or us very well. So similarly, real victory is to be on Krishna's side and fight for Krishna's cause, like Jatayu. Adrian, if you lose, you win. And if you win, you win. So that's good. And the Kshatriyas, when they were fighting according to religious principles, which are Krishna's principles, if they lost, they won. And if they won, they won. So that's also very good. But if we don't fight on Krishna's side, like Duryodhana and others, and we violate religious principles, Krishna's principles, and we're not doing it as even as a service to Krishna, then if we win, we lose. And if we lose, we lose. So that's not very auspicious. So the conch shells announced after Krishna was blowing his conch shell and everyone else blew it in harmony with Krishna's conch shell, that anyone who followed Krishna was going to win. Even if they lost, they'd win. And everyone who followed the opposite side, if they didn't fight according to religious principles, they lose, even if they won. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Drona and Bhishma, they were... Bhishma was a pure devotee, but he was fighting for Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana. Can you explain why was he on this, looked like an enemy side towards Krishna?
Well, that was Krishna's arrangement. This is a long story in the Mahabharata to explain how that all happened, but the short story is that Bhishma was being maintained by Duryodhana as a Kshatriya. So, being maintained as a Kshatriya, therefore he was obliged to fight on Duryodhana's side. Otherwise, why did he accept maintenance? Because he also knew that he was going to lose, because Krishna was on the other side. He knew Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he knew that there's no way he was going to win. But Krishna arranges for pastimes also to show that even if you become as powerful as Bhishmadev, a Dronacharya, if you fight the wrong side, you're going to lose. Otherwise, if Bhishma and Dronacharya had joined Arjuna's side, there wouldn't have probably been a war. So Krishna had to arrange all these things. I mean, the whole battlefield Kurukshetra was arranged so Krishna could speak the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna for our benefit. That's the really significant part of the Mahabharata. Anything else? Yes?
Was Krishna also involved in the battlefield involved in Gola Chandra in
as far as I remember, yes. Yeah.
Dronacharya, he killed a lot of foot soldiers, but they didn't get reactions for this.
Well, he got his head cut off, left his body.
Everyone went in spiritual.
No, I don't know if he went to the spiritual world. Everyone gets a reaction, you don't. Generally speaking, I don't know exactly what happened. In the Mahabharata, in some editions, says that Duryodhana went to the heavenly planets. But that's not a very good accomplishment for the heavenly planets.
Yeah, but Dronacharya, he went. Didn't he went to...
Doesn't say. I never read he went to the spiritual world. There should be no reason why he go to the spiritual world. As far as I know, it's not even mentioned where he went. If you can find out. Yes.
Thank you for the lecture, Maharaj. I was wondering, when you were talking about these welfare activities and distributing like prasadam, for instance, is there a difference when you're distributing prasadam if you like trick people into accepting Krishna's mercy or actually presenting it as what it is?
Well, Prabhupada said in a lecture that if people understand it's prasadam, they'll get at least a human form of life. Otherwise, not. Yeah. He said that if they take prasadam and they don't know it's prasadam, then the best that's going to happen to them is they'll come back, even as an animal, but they'll get another chance to get some more prasadam. We're Krishna consciousness is what we're trying to spread. We're not trying to feed people. We're trying to help them become Krishna conscious. And prasadam is one way of helping that. Just like if we eat prasadam and we're not Krishna conscious, then we're just eating out of lust. And our benefit is quite minimal. The idea is that when we honor prasadam, then we can remember Krishna. And by remembering Krishna, which is the goal of everything we're doing, our material desires would be diminished to lord it over the material nature. Because eating is the most basic desire to lord it over the material nature. But if Krishna is involved, then that desire will diminish. We make progress. But if people just eat out of this material desire, then that's what they're going to get, is material desire. But if they understand it's offered to Krishna, then there's some Krishna consciousness involved. Anything else? Yes.
Yugas go like Satya Yuga, Treta Dvapara Yukai.
Well, in this round it went like that. It usually goes Satya, Dwarapa, Treta, and Kali. But this round, it says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, was inverted. When instead of having Treta Yuga, we had Dwarapa Yuga.
But in this other cycles,
yeah,
that is still in Dvapara Yuga, is like also sacrifice, is also deity.
I don't know what the difference is. I mean, generally the normal procedure should be meditation, then sacrifice and temple worship, then chanting. It's just a logical sequence. Because meditation is the goal, and when we're not pure enough to meditate upon Krishna, it's because we have material desire, and that material desire is usually our inability or our unwillingness to sacrifice for Krishna. And so when we sacrifice for Krishna, then we gain the ability to meditate. And when we don't sacrifice for Krishna, when we don't offer our activities to Krishna, in other words, when we don't recognize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as in Dwarpa Yuga, was people are becoming more lusty, and therefore they have temple worship in order to, so people can personally serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by such service, they develop a desire for sacrifice, and by such sacrifice, they develop the desire to hear and chant about Krishna. And in Kali Yuga, well, we have no desire, we have no idea who God is, or we have no desire to serve Him, but to speak of even performing sacrifice for Him, then what was the question of meditating on Him? So by chanting, we get to know Krishna, and therefore we become eligible to perform deity worship, by which then we want to sacrifice whatever we have for Krishna's service, and then we get the chance to meditate on Him. So that's usually how it follows. But what it means when there's a normal sequence of yuga, that it's Satya, Dwarpa, Treta, Kali, I have no idea. It just mentioned there was an inversion of the two in this particular cycle.
Because probably these things, they define some yuga, or for example, life durations.
Yeah, but the life durations seem completely normal for the yugas. They're diminished by 464,000 years every yuga was diminished.
Yes, but what then that even mean that it was inverted?
I don't know. Inverted. I have no idea. It just mentions it.
Does that mean that in other cycles they lived like 100,000 years and then 1,000?
No. I don't know. I can't say. 100
and then 1,000. It's like it doesn't. Was switched on and nothing else.
Well, the Bhagavatam doesn't mention these things because maybe some other Purana does. Because this is not very important for what the Bhagavatam is all about. It's just a detail. It just mentions the Bhagavatam that in this cycle, when Krishna and Lord Chaitanya appears, there's an inversion of Dwarpa and Treta. Because Dwarpa means two, and obviously Treta means three. And Sat means, you know, goodness, whatever. But so it seems that one, three usually comes after two, rather than three, two, one, or countdown, then the explosion, whatever. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj, Shrimad Bhagavad Gita, Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.